Kia ora and welcome back to RDU's Burnt Breakfast here on RDU 98.5. I've got what station we were. Right now, though, I have on the line with me Mr. Raf Manji to talk about recent political events. Good morning, Raf.
Good morning, Liam. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I just want to do a quick shout-out to people involved in the terrible event in Wellington overnight, where there was a fire at a hostel in Newtown, where there have been several fatalities. And that obviously is, you know, a pretty shocking event. We remember the Grenfell fire in London, and when you get fires in these in hostels or apartment blocks, it's pretty terrible stuff. So just want to shout out to the emergency services responding to that, and hope that the loss of life is not as high as they think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think an appropriate place to start there. A horrible thing to happen, but yeah, very appreciative of our fantastic first responders at the moment. So thank you for starting there, Raf. I guess the other big talking point of the week will be the budget on Thursday. I don't know, it's going to be an interesting budget. I feel like a lot rides on this, you know, politically, to, you know, kind of black and white it there. But I'd just like to get your thoughts. Do you have many predictions for this week's budget?
Look, I think it's going to be a fairly ordinary affair. That's for a number of reasons. One is, you know, the government doesn't have huge amounts to throw around, and to be honest, it never normally does in budgets, but I just think the huge amounts of money that have been spent by the government in the past, you know, two or three years because of COVID, and probably way too much money, there's probably not that much to go around. They've reallocated some funds. I mean, often the budget is smoke and mirrors. You know, money is moved around, announcements are made for spending that was already announced in previous years, and they re-announce it, and you kind of, if you don't really know, then you kind of think, oh great, that's new money, but actually it's just stuff they said they were going to do last year, but they're actually
right,
going
yeah,
to spend it this year. And so I think what we've seen, and what's different about budgets these days, is most of it is announced in advance, and it's not, you know, like in the olden days, it'd be really exciting to see sort of what happened, and it would be such a surprise, and it's probably quite difficult to keep things a surprise these days. So, you know, we've had announcements about defence spending, and yesterday there was education spending, and there was on Sunday there was the cyclone recovery spending, and yeah, so I'm not expecting too much, and obviously the election is not far away, and look, I mean, the in the back of my mind, there's a little buzzer going off saying, can we have a snap election announced on the weekend? It's not, you know, it's a low probability, but it's not beyond the bounds of possibility. And I think the government would certainly have one eye to the election, so they won't want to sort of go too hard. They probably won't do anything dramatic around tax, if anything.
Right.
They might shift the thresholds or bring in some indexation stuff, but I think they'll probably leave that as well for the election. So I imagine you'll just see lumps of money going to things which you think, oh yeah, that sounds good. A bit of money for health and a bit of money for the police, and you know, we've had obviously the education spending. So I don't think anything too exciting on Thursday, but you never know. There's always a couple of announcements which they save up, which are enough to surprise people and maybe get a headline.
Albeit slim chances, what makes you think there's the possibility for a snap election?
I think this is a political thing rather than anything else. I mean, there's two reasons. From a political point of view, National have struggled to make headway. I mean, they should be well ahead in the polls.
Yeah.
But they're not. So Labour might think, actually, it's best to go early, because actually things are probably going to get worse over the winter. The health system is absolutely at a crisis point. I mean, the the health minister, or the previous one, Andrew Little, said, you know, the last few years saying there's no crisis in health. Well, there's a, you know, he obviously hasn't been to a hospital recently. The health system is really in serious crisis. I actually had a friend who had to go through the hospital system over the last 4 or 5 days. And whilst the care is always really top notch, I mean, there's no beds. His base was sent home because they need beds. They just don't have enough beds. People are all over the shop in hospitals. So the hospital system is stretched, and we've got a winter to go through, and a winter where you could, you know, people still having COVID issues. I think I saw yesterday 58 people died last week. Is that the number?
Wow.
You know, there's still people dying from COVID.
Yeah.
The flu season hasn't hit us. And, yeah, the backlog for surgery is enormous. So I think there's a lot of difficulties to come for the government over the winter. Interest rates continue to bite, and people will still be, you know, getting the news that their mortgage rates have gone up 2 or 3%. The economy is slowing. So, yeah, there's not a lot of good news to come in the next sort of 3 to 4 months. So the government might think, look, let's just get on with it. People are bored to death of talking about, you know, polls and the next government. So let's go. The only, you know, there are lots of issues around timing and timetables and getting people available, but which will probably mean it won't happen. But it's, you know, it's from a political point of view and a timing point of view, it would make a lot of sense. But obviously these things are quite challenging for all of us. So that's probably why it's not going to happen. But yeah, but I think the budget will be pretty pretty steady.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there'll be the odd announcement, but I wouldn't expect anything too exciting.
So you've already touched on it. There was a pre-budget announcement about cyclone recovery funds. And I even heard Grant Robertson make a comment about, you know, natural disasters are likely to cost us more money in the future. Like, it's not a thing going away. Do you anticipate, if not this budget, future budgets to come, do you think we'll see a lot of investment in kind of green technologies and future proofing for natural disasters? Because it's kind of got to happen, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think what they've put out for cyclone recovery is pretty moderate.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of farmers, particularly in the hort sector, who've been completely wiped out. And that recovery is going to take a very long time for them. And a lot of them are going, well, where's the sort of support for us? And, yeah, I mean, it's deja vu all over again, as Leanne Dalzell was fond of saying. We went through this stuff in Christchurch. I mean, there's sometimes when I watch what the government is saying, I think, have you not actually looked at the lessons learned from Christchurch? And what we did, you know, with the red zone, with the rezoning of homes. I mean, I saw Grant Robertson sort of saying, oh, yeah, well, we're not sure what we're going to do about this and how to approach it. It's like, we went through this whole thing here. We had numerous court cases that went to the Supreme Court to work out, you know, what you could actually do in terms of taking people's properties. And, yeah, I think that's a little bit disappointing. But you know, rebuilding stuff kind of back in the same place just because it's sort of expedient to do. It's just, and we sort of said this after Christchurch and you know, the earthquakes, okay, we need to do things differently. We need to have a process for managed retreat. We need to work with the insurance sector to work out, okay, how are we going to deal with coastal properties? I mean, you've got that whole Murawai issue in Auckland where you've got all those coastal properties, which, you know, a lot of people just don't know what is going to happen to them. The old story where, you know, land is insured to a certain point, houses are covered by this bit of the insurance system, and then there's bits that are not covered, and everyone's going, well, what happens there? And again, we went through this, you know, particularly people who live around the Port Hills will remember the challenges around the rezoning there and land remediation. Yeah, so I think we're sort of constantly not quite, you know, making a great leap forward.
Yeah, right.
In terms of, you know, how we approach stuff, how we essentially approach urban planning. And a lot of that is around our infrastructure and where we put it and where we build our houses and how we deal with things like transport and transit and essentially how we live in a time where, you know, particularly for the North Island, the water, unfortunately, is going to come out of the atmosphere and be dumped regularly. So, you know, the predictions are for much heavier rainfall in the north, out of the Pacific, and more cyclones. So that means we've got to really think quite carefully about how we approach that.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we're a broken record on this. How many times can we kind of put ourselves through it, to be honest?
Well, we have to. I think this is just part of like human beings and how we react. You know, it's almost like how many times, you know, we'll all remember how many times does it take to learn a lesson
and
the door open. It's just, you know, the way we are, and I think it's very challenging. And it does take leadership, and I think we try to do a lot of this stuff after Christchurch, but I think also this is a general Wellington problem as well. Once stuff disappears into the bureaucracy and it's filed away, that institutional memory is lost. And I remember saying after, you know, the initial cyclone hit and the first couple of weeks after, and I was doing a few interviews about the fact that they should use the skirt model that we had after, you know, Christchurch in terms of the infrastructure repair, and then sort of setting up a committee or working group, commission or whatever it was called, to respond. And I said, well, they should appoint, you know, Leanne Dalzell to that immediately. And they didn't. And it's like, well, hold on, this is somebody who's you know, been an ex-cabinet minister, understands the legislation, understands some of those, you know, tricky issues. And, you know, they don't do things like that. So it's almost like they start again from scratch and go, okay, how do we approach this? I wonder what we know. Let's appoint to Brian Rush or whoever their normal person is to appoint to these things. And of course, the people on the ground are incredibly frustrated. And, you know, there are people doing amazing work in the community at the community level, and they don't have funding for it. And again, that feels like exactly what happened here. And one of the lessons of the earthquakes was actually, let's push stuff down to the community level. Let's support them to do the work because they know everyone. They've got all the networks and contacts, and they know how to get stuff done.
Yeah, honestly, I'm going to turn grey if I think about it too much more. I want to go back to something you said about National not really making huge leeway. They're not soaring in the polls or anything. And I think that's a good point to get you to clarify something for me. Now, this was something Christopher Luxon said about National proposing to essentially give you receipts on how your tax is used. Is that not what a budget is to some degree?
Yeah, I must admit, because I know that the term receipts has all kinds of meanings, but yeah, I was quite puzzled. I actually watched his pre-budget speech, and I thought, you know, the main bit of it was quite sound. Then he went off into, and we're going to introduce these three new things. And I just thought, I could sort of see the impulse of it, because I'm a big fan of kind of individualized data around every interaction you have. But I just think, what he was proposing is actually quite complicated. I think the government could be much better in how it presents information in terms of where money is spent. But, you know, there are charts there which tells you how much goes on, you know, welfare, health, and education, and what have you. So and at council, when we do the rates, we say, you know, this is how much money is going on community facilities and infrastructure and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, at an individual level, I don't think that's very helpful, to be honest.
Right, okay.
And probably, probably will never happen. So I think we can consign that one to the, good idea, but let's put it in the bin.
Yeah. Right, okay, good. I'm glad that's clarified for me a bit there. I want to stay on National for a second and talk about Christopher Luxon and the National Party basically already ruling out working with Te Pāti Māori. Given Luxon's commitment to kind of Māoridom and Māori issues, it hasn't been overwhelming his commitment to such things. Is this like quite a bold move to be making this far out from the election? Hello?
Yeah, sorry, I suddenly went on mute for some reason.
Oh, right.
Yes, yeah, so if you look at national records, you know, when they were in government the last time, you had Chris Finlayson, you know, leading the work around treaty settlements. They did a lot of really good stuff.
Mm.
He plowed through settlements. He did the Whanganui River deal, you know, the legal personhood, and, you know, and stuff was sort of ticking along quite fine. So I don't think there are any issues about National's approach to treaty settlements and treaty issues.
Mm.
I think the challenge is obviously what's happened with Te Pāti Māori and the Meka Whaitiri leaving Labour and going to join Te Pāti Māori in some bizarre way, which people still haven't quite worked out what the situation is.
Yeah, yeah.
And Te Pāti Māori, you know, being very different to the Māori Party of Tariana Turia and Peter Sharpe.
Yeah, right.
He worked on whānau order, who got money out into the community, set up those kind of structures. This is a much more aggressive Māori Party, and they, the current MPs, you know, they don't turn up to Parliament very often. They're quite disrespectful and dismissive of Parliament in general. And, you know, they're taking a much stronger line around Māori sovereignty, you know, Tino Rangitiranga. And yet, I think for some of their demands to leave the Five Eyes, and it all seems pretty extreme. Now, a lot of that is kind of posturing. But, yeah, it's hard to see them working with National in the way that the Māori Party worked with National previously.
Yeah, right.
But, of course, a lot of this is political stuff. There's a lot of stuff going on between Labour and the Māori Party in terms of the Labour-Māori caucus, which is led by Willie Jackson, and the Māori Party, which is led by John Tamahiri, and, of course, they're best mates. And so there's all, you know, these are kind of internal issues about
right.
Who gets the power, who gets to decide what. Now, it's a problem for the Labour Party. I don't get the sense Chris Hipkins actually has a lot of interest in any of this at all, and I think that's probably provoked the Meka Whaitiri move. Whereas, you know, Jacinda was a little bit more engaged in Māori issues. Hipkins doesn't really seem to be that interested. I mean, I'm not quite sure what he's interested in. He's quite sort of technocratic, bureaucratic.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And someone said, you know, he looks like a bit of a secondary school principal.
I get those vibes.
He's sort of just, yeah, quite sort of focused on, you know, day-to-day stuff, and but not at a national government level. Doesn't really sort of appear to be somebody with a lot of vision or drive. But, you know, he's getting the day-to-day stuff done. So I think for National to take that view is like, well, they were not really going to work together anyway.
Yeah, right.
But it, politically, it's a bit like when John Key ruled out New Zealand First. It helps voters to say, okay, well, there's no point voting for them because actually they're not going to be in a position to do anything anyway.
So yeah, interesting.
Te Pāti Māori and Labour and the Greens are going to be this coalition of chaos. And if you want to vote for that, good luck. But we're not working with them. Yeah, I mean, it's good for us because, you know, we end up, well, along with New Zealand First, as being, you know, the only, well, even though New Zealand First has ruled out Labour, so we're the only party that can actually just be quite grown up and just work with whoever and try and get good outcomes for the people of New Zealand, which is what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, and it would be, I mean, I very much hope for your sake you get in, because it would be nice to have an actual new party in Parliament for once.
Look, I think we are desperate. And I mean, I'm, you know, not talking my book here. I mean, we're desperate for some new voices in Parliament. You know, people who can talk about stuff, who don't just constantly give you political answers, but can answer the tough questions. They've got a bit of experience and might be able to actually get people in a room and bang a few heads occasionally and say, look, let's get this sorted out and not be tribal around your party, but take a sort of an independent and objective view around things. I mean, we're desperate for it. I really worry that if we just end up with the same old, we're not going to be in any shape to deal with the problems that we've got, or the problems that are already here, but the problems that are going to keep compounding over the next few years.
I was having a conversation with a friend over the weekend, and he made an interesting point about the fact that the main leaders debate is National Labour. And he said under MMP, it's quite appalling that that is the case. Do you agree with that?
To say that again, sorry?
He thought it was quite appalling that under MMP, you know, our main leaders' debate that, you know, you see on TV, whether it's TV1 or TV3, is solely National and Labour. That's kind of the key, big, main debate. Do you think there should be a leaders' debate solely of those two parties?
Look, I mean, it's because we have this MMP system that has this very high threshold, which means it's very difficult for new parties to come in.
Mm.
And after 25 years, we've ended up actually in a bit of a kind of status quo.
Yeah.
And so there is this sense that, oh, actually, we're still in a sort of first past the post, you know, left, right, two major parties.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're not in that more European model or, you know, other country models where you have a much broader coalition of a whole range of parties. And yes, yeah, so essentially it's like, well, and Hipkins kind of said this as well. He goes, oh, well, we're in charge and the other small parties shouldn't sort of be too demanding.
Mm.
And you get that sort of sense. And I think, you know, I mean, he's quite dismissive of the Greens as well, which I always find quite interesting because, you know, they're going to be their coalition partner in cabinet. So how that's going to work is anyone's guess. He doesn't seem to have much of a relationship with the Greens, whereas Jacinda, obviously, and James were quite matey. So, yeah, we're sort of going back to that sense that it's a, you know, single party will win and that's the end of it. But that's not how our system is structured. So it's a bit messy. And, I mean, the leaders' debates, my God, they're going to be cringe. I mean, it's not something anyone is even actually speaking to some of the media people, they're just, you know, beside themselves to think, how are we going to make this vaguely interesting?
Yeah, right.
You know, you're going to need the Hosk's going to need to be on steroids to get some excitement out of the two Christophers, because it's going to be a bit boring.
Mm.
And, I mean, you know, where's the vision? Where's the charisma? Where's the excitement? So I think, yeah, they're all struggling with that to think, how can we make this interesting? And to do that, you need more voices. And you need people with a sense of actually where are we going with New Zealand? What are the opportunities? What are the younger generations going to be interested in? How do they get involved? And yeah, it's that's why I think actually a snap election would be great, because it would just be so quick and everyone would get really excited, as opposed to a slog through. My God, we have the whole of winter with this, and people are just going, actually, I've had enough. How do I leave the country for a holiday? And it's going to be quite a challenging time. But I'm kind of looking forward to it, because anything could happen. And I think, you know, you just don't know. Yeah, you just don't know.
There we go. Keeping in high spirits there. Hey, Raph, thank you so much for joining me this morning. It's much appreciated. And, hey, have a great day.
I hope so. Look forward to it. And obviously we'll be thinking, you know, the impact of the event in Wellington is, you know, will roll on, and that just thinking about the families of those who've died and the survivors, and, you know, the emergency services and community groups that will be responding to this, you know, evokes memories of the Grenfell fire and the terrible impacts of that. Hopefully it's not at that scale, but that will be a challenging day for people in Wellington today.
Yeah, well said. Thank you, Raph.